Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I am Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting our regular chat sessions with Kelly Gottlieb, Professor Emeritus at the University of Toronto. Kelly is one of the most significant contributors to computing education, the profession, and industry worldwide. Kelly, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience. Will you share a story from the past and then comment on something you're working on presently?
Thank you, Stephen, for inviting me. I have quite a few stories from the past, and this one goes quite a long way. Because when computers came in, everybody saw them as wonderful things. But like most technologies, after they've been established for a while, you start to see some negative side. And the negative this side was concerning privacy of data banks. Companies were starting to collect computerized data banks of credit records, and governments were collecting computerized data banks of about people, about employment histories and things like this. And in the United States particularly, they started to consider passing laws limiting the data that would be collected on data banks and its dissemination and the rules for acquiring it and storing it, disseminating it. And they passed the Fair Credit Act about 1970, and then 1974 they passed a Privacy Act concerning data held by personal records held by government records. Well, in Canada we followed this thing, and they established first of all a Privacy Federal Task Force. This was during the time John Turner was the Prime Minister. And I was on that task force, along with some well-known people, Richard Gwynne, the columnist. And we collected quite a lot of data. And at the same time, the various governments were interested about privacy of government information, and the Ontario government appointed a task force to look into the privacy of medical records, and they appointed Justice Horace Creever to write this report. When I was on a task force and lecturing about computers and privacy, Horace Creever came to one of my lectures, actually. And I mentioned to him a medical record, for example, that if you went into a hospital, they would ask you for your social insurance number, which by law had been set up really to set up a social insurance program. And there was even something in it that said that you shouldn't ask for it for other purposes. Well, Creever tested this and was quite surprised indeed to find that hospitals were asking for a social security number. And so we became sort of friends, or at least acquaintances, and it blossomed later into a friend. He eventually wrote a long letter, a long series of reports on privacy of medical records, which among other things advised that eventually patients ought to be allowed to see their own records. Until then, doctors had the right to see them, and it took a long time for the medical profession and the law to come to this, but they did. Well, I kept talking about privacy, and as we got more and more technology, which enabled computers and information processing devices to look into privacy, things like privacy of emails. Although ordinary mail was protected by privacy and you couldn't interfere with it, there were no such laws on email, and then you start to get all kind of surveillance techniques, and the record collecting keep going up. In spite of the fact that the government eventually in 1980 passed a law in Canada, the privacy law and the freedom of access to information law, a pair of laws. There's always been a balance between the freedom of information and privacy. Well, during the 80s, the laws were there, but fewer and fewer attention was being paid for it. And toward the end of the 80s, at Queens, there was a conference conducted on the privacy of records in which they invited me to be the guest speaker. Well, I was, actually. I was a keynote speaker on a Friday night. But the lecture I gave was entitled, Privacy, a Concept Whose Time Has Come and Gone, which was completely counter to the theme of the problems. It made for a very interesting conference because from then on everybody talked about whether people were really interested in privacy. My argument was that people, for any kind of promotion or government entitlement or getting a credit card or whatever, people gave up their privacy very early. And although there's a long history of interest in privacy, going back to laws of libel and the Peeping Tom, and which comes about when Tom peaked at Lady Godiva, and a man's castle is king, with a law, with a proverb going back to 1560, I said the privacy was getting very, very much weaker, and people didn't care about it. So this, in fact, that paper which came out got more attention than any paper I've ever written. Well, both pros and cons for it. Well, and my argument was that technology of computers was downgrading the value of privacy. Well, when 9/11 came, the catastrophe of 9/11, that happened in spades. Then, of course, the government got terribly interested in what any person of even slightly suspicious might be doing, and they started looking into the privacy of into what planes you were taking and what connections you were taking, and started doing surveillance on the internet. So at that time, I changed my theme, and I said, instead of privacy, a concept has come and gone, security trumps privacy every time. And I was at conferences once where Ann Cavoukian, who is a privacy information commissioner of Ontario, a very, very able lady and doing her very best and admirable, and we've been on program together, when I pronounced this, privacy, it trumps, and security trumps privacy every time. She bridled at this, and she offered to come to my class to challenge it, which so far she hadn't done. And then about a month later, well, a couple of months later, there was a conference at Guelph, and Horace Krieger was back again, and I got up in the audience, and by this time we were friends, and I said the thing, and he also bridled it. So everybody, whenever I use this theme, security trumping privacy every time, the very good famous people who are pursuing privacy, typified by Horace Krieger and Ann Cavoukian, challenge me, but I don't think they've ever affected ever produced a good argument that weakens my statement. I thought privacy was gone completely until recently, when the Supreme Court has kind of put not a stop, but at least a slow down, President Bush attempts to, hide prisoners and do surveillance even on the public, and the privacy is picking up some interest in the United States. There are now some serious advocates, even among the Republicans, but I'm still inclined to think that security trumps privacy is the theme of our present situation, and it's going to be a hard time coming back to a place where privacy got the respect that it used to.
Well, that's an interesting sort of aspect about security versus privacy, and do you see limits still, though, or at some point where security goes too far?
Well, There should, first of all, I think there should be. And I, when at the conference where Anne were there, she said, oh yeah, she said, what we've got to do is get technology to do privacy enhancing techniques. So she gave one example that, when you go through an airport security, you, there are now machines that sort of check whether you're carrying metal. Now these machines produce an image of a body, of course, and really the body is practically no clothes. So there are machines now, I don't know if they're true in every airport, which when they do that, they scramble the image in such a way that you can't see the body properly, but if there are any metals, they would be seen. So she says, you know, there's an example of a privacy-enhancing technique. When you get the security, but the people have been cautious not to produce embarrassing image. Well, I like that, and I conceded, but I challenged her to produce another example. I mean, everybody knows what we'd like to do, but that's not where the attention being paid. What we're putting is RFDs, which you carry around with you and can trace where you are, global positioning systems, and more and more ways of capturing the position and the sayings of an individual citizen. The other thing where you might argue privacy has picked up is in Papaida. That's because in Canada now, we have rather strict laws on privacy of data that's collected by private companies. And every company now, first of all, it used to be the Crown Company, the airline company, and the bank that did it, but now every company has to tell you what rules it has for protecting privacy, and they have to have a commissioner on hand who will handle complaints. And now I guess that's happening, but the thing that I see most happening is the pride has become an interest. The lawyers took it over. And they offer like very expensive courses on how you can train men and women in your company so as to comply with PAPIDA. PAPIDA has been here now for about 2 years, longer in Quebec. I just wonder if the public feels more private, I wonder how much of the public know about PAPIDA. And whether they feel more private because the banks that tell you they will give you their privacy policy and they don't give you your banking information. I think most of the threats are coming from the surveillance that the public that is doing because they're worried of terrorists. And I sense that the PAPIDA, which is a worthy program, has not given public a much greater sense of privacy.
So I guess we are at this point then that because of 9/11, things will never go back to the way they were.
Well, remember 1984 where Big Brother was watching you, or the German, East German society Stasi, where they had thousands and thousands of people who watched everybody else, husbands watching wives, and they were really in societies under where there was no privacy. One was fictional, and one was actual, and we regard those as dystopias. I think we're slipping down that path. I think look at for blogs. Now, how many people are putting blogs in which they display all kinds of information about themselves and pictures and so on? Surely that's an indication that privacy is a less valued concept and right. So it partly is a security threat, but it's partly because the public is valuing privacy less. That's my opinion.
Well, that's an interesting idea. So I really appreciate your insights into privacy, especially because you have such a long history in that area, both commenting and on developing thoughts in that area. So thank you again.
Well, Ms. Kavukin and Justice Creever both kind of, as I say, bridled when I got up in a conference and challenged this thing, and I kept saying, look, I'm not saying this should happen. I'm right now acting as an observer who's pointing out all the things that are happening. And if we do value privacy, I'd like to think there's still some sense things we'd like to keep privacy for ourselves. We're going to have to be a lot more careful about how we go about ensuring that some privacy remains. You see, another example is medical records. There's a great advantage of medical records were freely available. If you go to a trained doctor, and he could sort of go electronically, you get sick in a house in a strange city, and he could electronically collect your case history from the hospital at which you normally go to, you'll get treated better. So there's actually an advantage to making medical records available more freely. On the other hand, you don't want to make them more freely to insurance agency who are doubting whether you had whiplash or something like that. So you have to set up a system that the increased accessibility, which will be an advantage many times, nevertheless, it doesn't take to your disadvantage. I think it can be done, but I'm not sure it is being done.
Well, I guess technology will perhaps provide that balancing act, but you need some kind of political will or
exactly
behind it.
If the public doesn't make noises, the politicians won't react. I think a politician can get credit by decrying privacy, but no government tries to get credit by doing anything about it.
So actions speak, I take it.
Exactly. I don't think it's a lost cause, but I think it does need a public awakening.
Right. Well, you know, thank you, Kelly, for coming in today to share your deep insights with us and with our audience. Again, it's very much appreciated.
Well, I hope I'm not being too pessimistic, because I think there's lots of good things about computers. But it's a double-edged knife.
But it's always good that you're raising this awareness, and you have such a deep history with it. So.
Okay, Stephen. Well, I'd be glad to have the reactions to the podcast on this thing, and challenges and counter examples. I'd be glad to hear about them.